Hello and welcome to Horror Movie Yearbook. I'm your host, Willie Gibbs, and with me is my magnificent co-host,
Tim Long.
Yeah, there he is. There he is. How you doing, Tim?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I got a short week at work this week, so that's pretty exciting.
You're going to Chicago.
Going to Chicago. Yeah. Yep. For a few days.
What are you doing in Chicago?
Going to a wrestling event.
Yeah, we should talk about wrestling on this show.
Yeah. I'm going to two wrestling events.
Yeah, you are going to two. Yeah. You're outdoing me from WrestleMania. Although I went, technically WrestleMania is like three wrestling event links.
Yeah, honest to God, that's like, yeah, that might be too much for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, if anything, this is a testament to my wife and how much patience she has for me. I mean, this is our anniversary weekend and we're going to watch live wrestling.
That's amazing. What, you guys do anything else though?
Yeah. We're going to go to a zoo. We're going to go to the McDonald's Museum.
Okay.
We're going to go to Navy Pier, maybe Magnificent Mile, do a little shopping.
Okay.
And we'll see what, you know, there's other stuff in the outskirts of Chicago that might be fun to do too.
I used to live there, yeah.
Yeah. So
I never went to the McDonald's Museum though.
Yeah, that's in Rosemont, I believe. Or no, that's in Des Plaines.
Oh, okay.
Bus, Des Plaines. That's all I could think of.
Did you see they're making a Hervé Villechaize movie?
Like a biopic?
Starring Peter Dinklage.
Oh my God. Hey, you know what? I'm down. I'll see it.
Oh, he lived a fascinating life.
Did he?
Oh yeah. He was like, he had a lot of sex, like dangerous. Like he lived dangerously.
Oh, cool!
That man.
I can't wait to watch this.
Yeah, if they stick to what I remember, it's gonna be good.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
And it's gonna be on HBO. So though.
Oh, that'll be great. I can't wait. But yeah, so gonna do that this weekend. Pretty excited about it. I probably won't report back about it because this is a horror movie podcast, not a wrestling podcast. But it'll be fun. Tim, what do you got going on? What's new? Anything exciting? Same old.
Might go to Motor City Comic Con.
Okay, cool.
That's coming up. Yep. Thinking about it. Not sure.
Who do you want to meet?
If
you can meet one person on the guest list, who would it be?
Well, Michael Rooker will be there.
Fresh
off Guardians of the Galaxy.
Hot off Guardians of the Galaxy.
The number one movie in America, two weeks in a row.
Star of Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yes.
And Slither. Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's done quite a bit of horror.
Gunn will be there from Gilmore Girls, James Gunn brother.
Yep, Sean Gunn.
Martin Starr will be there.
Martin
Starr, who's amazing. Silicon Valley, this season is like the best season.
That show is consistently great.
I thought season three had a bit of a dip. I thought it was a little too, there weren't enough jokes for me. This season is hysterical.
Good.
So
good. So I think we should kick things off the way we always do. Let's go into some feedback. You can leave us feedback. Facebook.com/horrormovieyearbook. We're on Twitter @HMYearbook. And you can email us horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. So many ways to get a hold of us, and just do it. I'm going to thank John Morrell up front for our music. We usually thank him at the end of the episode, but thank John Morrell for our music at the front and back of this episode and every other episode. And just a quick mention as well, please rate, review, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
We say this all the time. We'd like to see a new one on there. Yeah. That'd be cool. Let's see a fourth one. I think we have three on there.
Oh, do we?
Let's see a fourth.
Okay.
Maybe a fifth.
Only a 5-star, though.
Yeah, 5 stars, please.
If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all.
You know what? You can say less nice things in the comment. I'm cool.
Oh, yeah.
Just give us a 5-star.
Yeah, because we won't read that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we will read it, but
I was joking.
Come on, Tim. No, I'm just kidding. But no, please do. I challenge our listeners, please. 5-star review.
Yeah.
All right. We received an email from Jason. Frequent listener, long-time listener, long-time caller.
Who recently just watched all the Friday the 13th movies, I think.
Fantastic.
Jason, right?
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. And has recently watched Scream, the TV series.
Yes.
Jason says it's on Netflix. I'd say it's not great, but it's infinitely bingeable. If you're a fan of the movies, you'll probably like it. Being that it's an MTV production, everybody in the show is way too old to be playing the characters they're portraying and actually work as models in their day jobs. But it's legit. I thought I'd mention it since you talked a little about Riverdale on the show, which also suffers from that since it's a CW show. I have seen all of Scream the TV series up to this point.
I have 2 episodes left.
Okay, so you're getting close.
Yep.
Can't wait to talk to you about the Halloween special. I really want to. That's a polarizing one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I loved it.
Yeah.
And a friend of ours hated it.
Yeah, a friend of ours who likes Fear.com hated it.
That's true. He does like Fear.com. So, Yeah, no, we have seen it, and when I enjoy it quite a bit. Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. I mean, obviously, you know, there's a corniness level to it, but it has a lot of fun, and I think the nice thing about the Scream TV series is it's giving, because they're coming back for season three, although it's going to be kind of a reboot.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they do there.
Yeah, that makes me nervous.
I don't know where they go at the end of two, so.
There was more story to tell.
Okay.
I'll say that.
I wonder, it almost makes me wonder if they will still tell that story somehow.
I don't know. Okay. This could be a bit of a swerve too, but we'll see. Yeah, I enjoy it quite a bit. Yeah, I mean, it's got its corniness, and it's got a certain degree of, you know, teen drama going on there, but I liked it a lot, and I'm excited to see where they go with it. What I like the most about it is it gives some younger horror directors a chance to kind of get their feet wet with some TV. And then they have guys like Ty West who are established, who are able to come in and do episodes. And those are usually the standout episodes. So, no, I'm all for it. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always okay with more horror on TV.
I agree. I like the show. I like the show a lot.
Yeah.
I will say, I'm towards the end of two. And here's what I'll say about both one and two. They could probably cut like five or six episodes from the show each season.
Yeah, they could. There's a lot of padding.
Because it picks up. But two does a better job of building character as well. Because there's a death that happens at the end of two where I was like, oh my God, like I'm actually like emotionally invested in this character.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the amazing thing about, with the Scream, the film series, one of the unique things about that series was that they carried over all these characters.
Yep.
And I remember watching Scream 2, and there's going to be about to be spoilers for Scream 2 if you haven't seen it. Sorry. But, you know, Randy gets killed in Scream 2. And there are moments in the Scream TV series where characters that I started to like, you know, have become invested in over the course of hours of TV as opposed to just an hour of a film, where they get killed off, right, a similar feeling to what I had with Randy, where I'm just like, oh, man.
Yeah.
What a bummer, you know.
By the end of, I will say this for the movies too, by the end of like the movies, like, I don't even think I like Dewey in the fourth one.
Mm.
Like, I actually got less invested as the movies went on.
Sure.
Like, I kind of didn't care about any of it anymore.
You almost wished he had maybe croaked in the third one. Yeah. No, I gotcha.
Because I remember openly cheering in the theater for Dewey.
Oh, he's awesome.
I think it was part two. Because they tease his death in part two, don't they?
They tease it in every single one of them.
They do.
Because, yeah, he's borderline dead in the first one. He gets stabbed a billion times in the second one. I don't know if the third one. The third one's kind of a blur to me sometimes, so. But anyway, yeah, Scream TV series, definitely worth a look.
Riverdale's fun, too. And Riverdale will be on Netflix.
There you go.
Now, technically, yeah.
There you go. So yeah, by the time you're hearing this, it'll be on Netflix.
And
so
everybody should watch it. Well, not everybody. If you like Scream, you should watch Riverdale.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Watch Scream first, see how you feel,
yeah,
and then try out Riverdale if you enjoyed it.
There you go.
Got some Facebook feedback. Our buddy Anthony says, American Haunting was messed up. Shout out to John C. Reilly for his work in Dark Water. Favorite/worst movie of 2005 was Hostel. If someone drilled my eye out, I'd jump in front of a train too. I don't think we mentioned this feedback on our previous episode, okay, so I wanted to get that out there. But
that was for our 2005.
Yeah, that movie's pretty nasty. Tony on Facebook says that he's really enjoying the show, loves the structure. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Tony. You're awesome. He also said, in regards to his favorite 1989 film, which was this week's question, that the Burbs will always be in his regular rotation. That's a nice borderline.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about the Burbs on here. My buddy Joe can quote the entire movie.
Yeah. Really cool movie, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Glad I did not have a neighbor like Art. My refrigerator is happy, too. David Steele says, the year I was born, I love Exorcist 3, but I'm...
Sometimes listeners make me feel so old.
Right? Yeah, and what's funny is it's not that far apart.
No, I know.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, oh, my God, 89. No, don't worry. When I watch college sports and I see that they're born in like the 90s, I'm like, oh, God.
It feels weird, doesn't it?
They're born in like 99.
Get ready, because you're going to start getting ones that are born in 2000.
I know.
That's really going to mess you up. I love Exorcist 3, but I'm partial to Vampire's Kiss.
Oh, my God, yes.
Is that the Alyssa Milano one?
Yeah.
That's the very, very erotic vampire film. Okay. I remember that one. I rewound it a few times.
Wait.
Back in the day. I think that's the one. Or is that Kiss the Vampire? I can't
wait
remember.
Wait a minute. Vampire's Kiss. No. Vampire's Kiss is the Nicolas Cage one, I believe.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's the one where he eats the bug.
Yep. And he's running around going, I'm a vampire.
Embrace of the Vampire is the Alyssa Milano one. Yeah. Vampire's Kiss is pure insanity.
Yeah.
It's early Nick Cage. back before he got really bored.
He's out to prove something.
And that's one of his craziest performances. Yeah,
he's nuts. The founder, Mr. Alex Morrell of the Midwest Podcast Network.
Founder.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Says Star Trek V, The Final Frontier was pretty terrifyingly
bad.
He's
not wrong there.
Yeah. I never seen it, but I've heard. Back to our buddy Anthony.
Uhura does like a sexy dance.
Oh, really? Oh, movie. I've heard about this. Yes.
And she's a bit.
It's a bummer, right?
She's a bit older, and you're just like, come on.
Yeah, like you feel kind of bad for everybody involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anthony says Pumpkinhead. You know what? Here's the thing. Anthony, you threw me for a loop here because I went, oh my God. How do we miss Pumpkinhead? But Pumpkinhead's actually 88.
Yeah, Pumpkinhead's one
of those. It's one of those weird releases.
Weird releases. We run into that a lot of times.
Yeah, according to IMDb, which is not always trustworthy, but I'm going to go with that. It's 88. So we will probably talk about Pumpkinhead at some point.
Yeah, we should.
I'd be sad if we didn't.
Although we already did 88, didn't we?
No.
Okay.
Nope. We've done 87.
Okay.
Yeah.
87, 89, 90. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Sleepaway Camp 3. Great choice.
Yes.
Yep. And Pet Sematary.
Oh,
does not have to be in that order. We'll be talking about Pet Sematary.
We'll be talking about that. Yep.
And then Amy says Hasselhoff.
Yeah, my girlfriend Amy just apparently reacted to a picture of David Hasselhoff I put in the collage.
Really, she reacted any way a woman does when confronted with Hasselhoff.
Exactly.
With vintage Hasselhoff. Is all you can do is
yeah, that was
say 89.
That was Hasselhoff on the Berlin Wall as it came down.
Yes.
Doing his concert in a light-up jacket, if I recall.
Yep. This is like Hasselhoff back when he was in good shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's still all right.
No, he's honestly picked up the pace a little bit here.
Yeah.
But even during like a season or two into Baywatch, he was starting to lose it a little bit. Like he stopped training.
Right.
Yeah.
I imagine for that Baywatch movie, he's probably got back into shape.
Looking pretty cut.
Whatever cameo he's got in it.
Well, he's got to look good next to The Rock.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I think it's time to jump back in the time machine. Head back to 89, where I was 3 years old.
And I was five.
Five.
Yeah.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Let's hear that time machine kick into high gear here.
Ooga!
All right, classic. Back in 89, here we are. What's going on in 89? First things first, the Tokyo stock market crashes, which is an official end to Japan's long period of economic growth. Mm. They were taking over the world kind of for a little while there, and then it was like, wait a second, pump the brakes, kids. And then,
crash.
Yeah.
And how it goes.
Yeah, that's how it happens. You know?
You would think we would see these things coming.
You would think.
But we never do.
Yeah. We always think we're invincible. We're like that 19-year-old kid that has a crazy night in Canada. You know, he's like nothing can happen. Nothing bad can happen.
Just keep going up.
Yep. Yep. The registered partnership laws passed in Denmark, which grants same-sex couples many of the rights and responsibilities of marriage.
Man, Denmark in 89.
Wow, progressive Denmark.
Right? Good for them.
We're still trying to work out the kinks. Good job, Denmark. Thousands of students occupy Tiananmen Square in Beijing, China, protesting for democracy. The Chinese government declares martial law, and hundreds of demonstrators are killed. Tiananmen Square is something that even if you don't know necessarily the specific events that took place there, when somebody says Tiananmen Square, you go, oh, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it.
I do too.
Yeah. From when I was younger. Bit. I mean, I vaguely remember it happening when I was younger, yeah.
Yeah, I was a little young to remember it, but I remember it being talked about for a few years after, you know. Who becomes our president in 89?
George Bush Sr.
Senior.
George H.W.
H-dubs.
Yep.
Yep, he becomes our president.
Vice president, then president.
Yep, yep. The U.S. Supreme Court rules on June 21st that flag burning as a form of political protest is an act of protected speech under the First Amendment of the Constitution.
Oh, really? I thought that was before 89. I would have thought that would have been something like the 60s or 70s.
You are, as of 89, you're officially allowed to burn the flag. Okay. And I hate to do it, but right back to pro wrestling, they did not waste much time having old Sergeant Slaughter get in the ring and burn a flag.
That was a high point for them creatively.
Sure was. still better than Shocker. Toyota launches its luxury brand.
The Lexus.
The Lexus in 89. Gotta like the Lexus. Classy, just a classy car. When you think class, you think Lexus.
I do. Like it. There's a casino called the Luxor, I believe,
yes.
In Las Vegas. It always reminds me of Lexus. Drive my Lexus to the Luxor.
Ooh, I like
and it's
that.
It's all class in Las Vegas.
That's beautiful.
Alliteration.
I like it. Stanley would be proud. serial killer Ted Bundy is executed in Florida's electric chair.
There you go. Ted Bundy movie coming out. You know who's playing him?
There's another one. coming out.
Oh, there's...
No, this is another Ted Bundy
movie? Yeah, they just cast Ted Bundy today.
So is this going to be a classy production or one of those like gross director
video? No, it's going to be a classy production.
Who is playing Ted Bundy?
Zac Efron.
Weird.
I can kind of see it.
Ted
Bundy wasn't a... Ted Bundy wasn't like a... He wasn't an ugly man.
No, he was kind of a lady killer, actually. Guys, gals, everybody listening, that was unintentional.
I'm not going to cut that. I'm just going to make sure everybody knows it's Willie that made that joke.
I want to apologize for what just took place.
That's all right. If you're listening to horror movie here, can you're easily offended.
Yeah. You've tuned
well,
out
Well, if
by
you're
now.
Offended by corny jokes...
But he was a bit of a ladies' man, is what I should say.
Yes, yeah, he was. So
he did.
Although Efron needs to tone down some of the. Ted Bundy was not as strong as Zac Efron is, like scary ripped right now.
It's reached a point of where it's alarming.
it's horrible.
Where he's got negative body fat.
Yeah. The Rock just kind of looks like the Hulk. Zac Efron looks like some sort of action figure. Like
it's a problem. He looks like a Rob Liefeld drawing.
It's awful.
Not good.
He would make a good Liefeld character.
He would make a good Liefeld character. Let's get Shatterstar the movie, please. All right. Speaking of Las Vegas, the Mirage Hotel and Casino opens as the first major resort hotel in Vegas. Big deal. There's plenty of them now.
Yeah.
Got plenty of options. But they were cornering the market back in 89. In Egypt, a 4,400-year-old mummy is found in the Great Pyramid of Giza. I'm obsessed with like I love mummies.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I was... About 5 or 6 years after this, after 89, boy, was I knee-deep in my Egyptian mythology.
Really?
Love. Oh, I own a copy of the Egyptian Book of the Dead translated.
Oh, my God.
It's fucking awesome.
See, I am not that into that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Like Egyptian. But I went to the Met in New York last year, and they have an entire section.
Oh,
it's Amy and I... Like, we finally had to leave it. We were there for, an hour. We're
That's
like, we got to see more of the Met.
That's awesome. They did a... They brought a lot of ancient Egyptian stuff to the DIA at one point.
Oh, cool.
And I went there, and it was super cool. They had an actual mummy. So sweet.
Tom Cruise.
I loved it. Yeah, Tom Cruise was in a sarcophagus. Which, when I was a kid, I was obsessed with this stuff, and I used to call him Sacrophagus. Because I didn't know how to pronounce it. Yeah. Looking back.
Yeah, at least you aim for the star, shoot for the...
Yeah, Sacrophagus. Sky TV launches in the UK. Sky TV is still a big, huge presence over there to this day. Nintendo releases the Game Boy in Japan in April and North America in July. Changed some lives right
it
there.
Did.
That
I had a Game Boy, yeah.
That was like, okay, you know, every once in a while you'd get like a Tiger Electronics handheld game from like your grandparents for Christmas.
I had a Wheel of Fortune one.
And you get tired of them after an hour.
Yeah.
So handheld gaming was lame. And then the Game Boy came out.
The problem with the Game Boy is for some kids, like their parents, like maybe their mother would really, really like Tetris.
Yeah.
And she would dominate.
She'd like,
not saying anybody I would know, but she would just play Tetris the entire time.
Okay.
And I thought Tetris was boring as a kid, but I've been playing it recently and it's awesome.
That, you know what, Tetris is pretty sweet. I think it gets better with age. With our age, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I will say a very important woman in my life, especially in my childhood, who will remain nameless. Mom, still remain nameless. She, I'm pretty sure, bought a Game Gear, air quotes, for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. She monopolized that Game Gear. Anyway, final little bit of news here from 89. Well, it's not news because it's 89. British police arrest 250 for celebrating the summer solstice at Stonehenge.
I was going to say, yeah, you had to put this in here.
I had to because this would make Conal Cochran. The CEO of Silver Shamrock, very, very pleased to hear this.
Sorry, I choked on my water.
Usually when I bring up Halloween 3, that's the reaction. In a good way. All right, let's talk music.
Yes, please.
From 89.
Yeah.
I'm counting on the top 10 in the Billboard charts. Giving You the Best That I Got by Anita Baker.
Okay.
Number 9, Baby I Love Your Way / Freebird Medley.
Now, is that Freebird by Skinner?
Yes.
And a Baby I Love Your Way, like, ooh, baby.
Yes, it's a medley by Will to Power.
I've never heard this.
I have just recently.
Now, by medley, it's how do they go about this?
It bounces between, like, It's so weird. It bounces between songs back and forth multiple times throughout this. You wouldn't think it makes sense, but it actually kind of works.
Okay, I saw this the other day, and I went, I have to listen to that, and I forgot to listen to it. Now I need to write it down.
Yeah, it'll be happening. Number 8, Girl You Know It's True by Milli Vanilli. I have not yet been called out for the charlatans they were. Number 7, Wind Beneath My Wings, Bette Midler. Wonderful song. 6, Cold Hearted, Paula Abdul.
I was a big fan of Paula Abdul.
Yeah.
But I think probably my first crush.
Okay.
Was Paula Abdul.
Yeah. Her and MC Scat Cat.
And I think that probably had something to do with it. Yeah.
Number 5, Miss You Much, Janet Jackson. Number 4, Straight Up, Paula Abdul. Really the greatest, in my opinion, the best Paula Abdul song.
I think so, too. And you remember the video, I believe, for that one had Arsenio Hall in it. Because yes. there were a lot of rumors around the time. Like, I see, though, this is where I start to like catch pop culture stuff, mm-hmm. that they were dating, but they never really talked
Ooh,
about it.
Because yeah.
Arsenio
like that.
Was big at the time.
He was a big deal.
Yeah, so this was like a hot couple.
I like that. That's an it couple right there.
But
Number 3, Every Rose Has Its Thorn by Poison.
Amazing song.
Number 2, My Prerogative by Bobby Brown.
And another amazing song.
And number 1, here's the weird thing. So most of this is it's got like more of an R&B.
I was going to say
vibe. R&B, like a little hip hop tinges here and there.
Very
like
poppy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then you get to Look Away by Chicago as the number 1.
I don't know this song.
I don't either. I like Chicago.
This was the number 1 song of 1989. Okay.
According to Billboard.
While you move on, I am going to search for this real quick. Before we move on, I have to know.
All right, we're going to do top 10 box office for 89. Number 10, Born on the 4th of July. Number 9, The Little Mermaid.
Born on the 4th of July at number 10, that's fascinating to me. Because that movie would not even be released in theaters right now.
No, it wouldn't, and it would never make that kind of money.
No.
It made $161 million.
I'm listening to Look Away by Chicago. Okay.
Oh yeah, I know the song.
Look away,
baby, look away.
I still have problems believing that was number 1 of 1989.
You know, the internet could be lying to me, but
no, it's okay. I believe you. I believe you.
I tried to do research. Number 9 is Little Mermaid, first movie I ever saw in the theater.
Brees gets a boner in it.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number 8, Ghostbusters 2.
Yes.
Number 7, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Number 6, Lethal Weapon 2. Number 5, Dead Poets Society.
Lethal Weapon 2, another one of my first crushes, the blonde woman.
Renee Russo?
No, the Swedish woman.
Oh, okay.
South African woman.
Sure, yep.
Yep, Swedish. Yep.
Number 4, Look Who's Talking.
Dead Poets Society, number 5, another one, like, born on the 4th of July.
So weird. We were totally different human beings back then. Number 3, Back to the Future Part 2. Number 2, Batman. And number 1, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Interesting.
Superhero movie still doing well.
You like Last Crusade?
Last Crusade is my favorite Indiana Jones movie.
Interesting.
It didn't start off that way, actually. No, you know, geez, that's tough. It's not Raiders, I'll tell you that.
What's funny is Raiders, I will flat out say, I think Raiders is the best of the three. Like, I think it's the best made.
Yes.
I will, if the other two are on, I will watch those instead. I love Temple of Doom, flat out.
I'm going to be blasphemous here and just say Raiders kind of bores me.
It does. It does, and it's not that it's a bad movie.
No, it's a great movie.
I think it's like, I mean, it's kind of like listening to a song you've heard a million times.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't need to hear it.
Right.
Yeah, whereas like Temple of Doom, I'm all over it. That's the horror fan of me, though, I think. Plus, Temple of Doom was my first Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah.
I did not see Raiders until, Raiders was the last one I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, other than that horrible one we don't talk
kid,
about.
When you're a kid, I know some people are annoyed by him, but Short Round is cool when you're a kid.
He's awesome.
You get to hang out with, Willie is a bit.
She's a bit much.
She's a bit much.
But back then, you can kind of deal with it, too.
That and Willie.
It's an offensive
Willy,
character now.
The Willie character is really funny, just knowing what Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, like, they're both going through divorces.
It makes so much more sense. when you know that, it makes a lot more sense.
It's just another layer of, like, whoa.
She mostly bugged me because I go by Willie. And
right.
So I was like, wait, that's a girl's name? And it really upset me for a little while, but I got over it. All right, you know what? Let's just jump right into our movies.
Let's do it.
Our first movie today is Wes Craven's Shocker. The synopsis is, after being sent to the electric chair, a serial killer uses electricity to come back from the dead and carry out his vengeance on the football player who turned him into the police. All right. Yep. How old is the football player supposed to be in this movie?
He's supposed to be a high school senior, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Peter Berg. Yep. Sure.
Peter. Yeah. Yeah. If you think Scream is bad.
Yeah. 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 Watch this one and recognize the fact that Peter Berg is playing a high school student. Shocker was kind of an attempt to recapture the glory of the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. By this point, we were past, we hadn't hit Freddy's Dead yet.
No.
So things hadn't really exploded yet for that franchise, but they were getting close here.
Yeah.
And
by that point, Freddy had become a jokester.
He wasn't scary anymore. And I think this was Craven's attempt to go, you know what, I need another hit. I need another franchise. I need to kick off another franchise here. I need to get back on the map a little bit. Do you? What was Craven's previous movie to this one? Do you know off the top of your head?
It would have been... Let's look it up. He wrote... Well, part three was way earlier than that. Because we're... Nightmare on Elm Street, we're in part five by this point,
mm-hmm.
aren't we?
Yep.
What's Craven? Let's see. It wasn't People Under Stairs. That was 90, right?
Yep, I believe so.
So it would have been 1980, 1984. See, yeah, I don't know. Oh, here we go. His IMDb is confusing because it does not start with his directorial efforts.
Weird.
It's good radio. It was Serpent in the Rainbow. Okay.
Okay, which was not exactly well received.
Right, and then Deadly Friend right before that.
Yep. So Craven needed a hit.
He did, and then Chiller before that. This was, yeah, he was in a rough.
Yeah, he was in a rough
Although
spot.
Serpent in the Rainbow was interesting.
I like Serpent in the Rainbow.
Yeah.
But I understand why it wasn't terribly well received. Yeah, and Deadly Friend pretty much sucks. so, except for that basketball scene. Yeah, he needed a hit, and here's the thing. So what he attempted to do here is you create a character, an iconic-looking character who's got a lot of personality. In Horace Pinker, who is the Shocker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm just going to call him the Shocker because it's funny to me. and you throw on this kind of cool, like, hip 80s hairband soundtrack. You know, like, you throw a lot of cool, like hair metal on it.
Because that was big at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that was also getting close to being done. Like we weren't too far out from that ending.
From soundtracks to movies and stuff.
Yeah, for that genre of music.
Oh, you mean like heavy metal? Gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
It was on the downslide here, shortly after this movie came out, if not already while this movie was out. So, because once we got into when did Nirvana hit the scene?
92, 93.
Yeah, so we weren't too far out from the mm-hmm. death of this type of music. But anyway, so, you know, really, when you put the ingredients Craven had, you put the Wes Craven in here, you got this character played by Mitch Pileggi, who's kind of got this iconic look about him and kind of a unique set of skills as a slasher villain. You've got, air quotes again, young hip cast.
Yeah.
You've got this bitchin' soundtrack. This is a recipe for success.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that this can go wrong.
No.
Right? What happened, Tim?
It goes wrong.
Yeah?
Well, here's the issue with Shocker. And I say this as someone who watched it and enjoyed quite a bit of it. But a lot of it was for reasons. A lot of it wasn't for the right reasons. I do like the soundtrack is a blast.
The soundtrack's sweet.
The soundtrack is a blast.
They even created a supergroup for this.
Yes, soundtrack. With Paul Stanley, Rudy Sarzo.
Yeah.
Who am I missing here?
It was a number of cool guys.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
What was the name of the band? Do you remember?
The Dudes of Wrath.
The Dudes of Wrath.
Yeah, it was Dudes of Wrath, and
which is super awesome.
The issue with Shocker, other than the excellent soundtrack, is it feels like. Four or five. Tommy Lee was the other one.
Yes,
it feels like four or five movies in one.
Yeah.
Like he has, Wes has a lot on his mind here, and he never really gets that much of it across in the movie because this movie is so busy.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, by about 45 minutes into the movie, I think the movie is kind of like we're just getting done with the prologue, or the movie's over. So, like, the first 40 to 45 minutes is all set up of Horace Pinker. And so either you end it as a short film, and, like, Horace Pinker gets the electric chair.
Yeah.
Or you continue on, which is what Wes does, and then Wes goes on to make some sort of kind of like Nightmare on Elm Street, like, dream horror type deal.
Kind of.
And then kind of like a zombie movie type deal.
Kind of.
And then he throws in some social commentary towards the end,
yeah.
Which is actually my favorite part of the movie, despite how goofy it is. But he's also it's also still a slasher movie, and it's also a really broad, kind of stupid comedy.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot to take in. I do. There are things I like. Mitch Pileggi is giving it his all here.
He is. And you know what? And here, oh, man, this is tough. I like Mitch Pileggi in general. I like him in this movie mostly. The issue is not with his performance. The issue is with what he was told to do. And it's with the writing of the character. I think my problem is that if you wanted to start a new franchise or to make this Horace Pinker character as scary as Freddy was the first time we saw him, right? He's essentially the new Freddy Krueger. They failed because they made a character who's a lot more in line with Jokey Freddy from that failing franchise as it stood in 89. Mm-hmm. And so you almost wonder, like, I know Craven was not a fan of that. Was not a fan of the interpretation of Freddy after his movie. Or I should say past three, for sure. Mm-hmm. So it surprises me that he was like, this is the way to go.
It almost feels like he saw it making money at that point and said, I guess that's what people like. Let's do it. The issue is, even in the DVD, the special features, which Screen Factory has put together a wonderful package for this. Better than it deserves. A lot of Screen Factory releases.
Yeah.
But it's really good. But they have an interview with Mitch Pileggi in there, and Pileggi basically says, I had free reign. I could just do it. Wes is just go nuts. Give it to me. And he would just, there are plenty of takes left on the floor, but nothing was too over the top.
He's like a kid at a candy store.
And I think at some point, he probably should have been reined in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but this movie's not very good. As far as the structure of it is just all over the place.
It's a mess. There's too many characters. Let's throw that out there.
There's too many characters. There's too much stuff going on. The first act, I assume, is way too long.
It's 40 minutes.
It's so long. I mean, there's so much stuff going on that at least his performance is hilarious.
Yeah.
And entertaining.
Yeah, as is Peter Berg's, for different reasons.
Peter Berg is bad.
Yeah, he's not an actor. He's a director, most of the time.
Most of the time, yeah.
He's not an actor.
Yeah. I like him in bit parts.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a little bit in Smoking Aces, and he's actually pretty good.
A little bit in Smoking Aces. What was that? He was, Very Bad Things?
I think he, yeah.
I like Very Bad Things quite a bit, because I think he plays a part in that.
Yeah, I believe so.
I know he directed it.
Yeah. Overall for me, that it's a miss from Craven, and I it's ambitious. He's trying to make a huge, big spectacle horror movie, but it misses. It never commits to any one plot thread or any one tone or any one idea that it's going on. The opening 40 minutes or so of this movie is dark.
It really is.
It's almost too dark. Horace Pinker kills everybody important to everybody in this movie.
And that's the thing with Freddy. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but once he became more of a jokester, they kind of dropped a lot of the darker elements of the Freddy character.
Yeah, they didn't talk as much about his history as a child murderer or whatever he was.
Yep.
So
I agree. Tonally, it's all over the place.
Yeah, and then you've got the character where his girlfriend goes back as a ghost, and I didn't understand
that. Oh, God, I forgot about that. Yeah.
It just doesn't make... None of it makes any sense.
There's
so
a really long scene. It seems like it takes forever of them in the parking lot where he's switching bodies.
Yeah.
That seems... I felt like it was 30 minutes long.
It's so weird.
It's so long.
And there's the big finale where he's jumping through a TV set.
Yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit.
It looks like crap.
It looks like crap. I'm not sure if it ever looked good, but I do kind of like it.
Okay.
Here's why. At the end of the day, this movie is probably, sometimes, even with New Nightmare, Shocker and New Nightmare feel like this is the first draft. New Nightmare is the second draft, and then he finally gets to Scream, which is his final draft. Because a lot of the ideas he's playing around with in both these movies are in there. But the same thing with New Nightmare is Wes is such an eloquent, smart guy when you hear him talk. And a lot of the times, the ideas in his movies are way more interesting when he talks about him just in some sort of lecture-type situation. Yeah. He has stuff on his mind.
What's he trying to say in this movie?
That's the thing, is I can't quite parse it. He's basically saying TV and electronics are going to rot your brain.
Yeah.
It's kind of the gist of it. I mean, that's a simplified version of what he's saying. But it's not that much deeper.
No.
And also, around the time, because there was a lot of, he uses a lot of war footage in this, so we are about a year or two away from the Gulf War kicking up.
Yeah, and at this point, people are starting to talk about the fact that it's a real possibility.
Yes.
That we're going to be going overseas and going to war soon.
And yeah. CNN has been around for, I think CNN was founded in 1980. So it had been around for about 8 or 9 years when this movie went into production. And CNN is that first 24-hour news network.
Yeah.
And they covered the hell out of the Gulf War. It was basically a TV war.
It was constant.
And around that time, the government could pretty much, I mean, the Defense Department could pretty much control what information went out to them because they were getting such big ratings, they just wanted it on their TV.
Yep.
So I think a lot of that is in the final, I mean, because that's kind of what he's using. So the thing with Carpenter and Craven are very similar because they're both visionaries in a sense. And a lot of their movies, like They Live, came around at the same time. A lot of movies kind of see into the future.
Sure.
I think I would probably agree with Wes that 24-hour news networks and constant news are bad.
Yeah, if Horace Pinker was around right now, he'd be jumping out of your Facebook feed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
which would be silly too. I mean, it's kind of a silly concept.
Yeah.
It's always going to be. But Carpenter and Craven are both similar in the fact that they're both visionaries. They both kind of saw the future around this time. The difference is Carpenter was much better at distilling his vision into a simpler film. Wes always had a lot on his mind, and it gets jumbled a lot in the narrative.
Sometimes with Craven, the concept or the idea, the thought that got into his head oftentimes winds up wounding the actual story of the film.
Right.
The message he's trying to convey sometimes winds up hurting the movie overall. Whereas Carpenter always found a good balance. He found a way to pepper that in without damaging the story, generally. So, yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, Wes's would also branch out into about 10 or 11 different things, and Carpenter was much more focused. Laser.
He had one or two ideas he wanted to...
Yep. Yep.
Few little factoids. According to Wes Craven, the film was severely cut for an R rating. It took around 13 submissions to the MPAA to receive an R rating instead of an X. Some of the scenes that were cut include Pinker spitting out the fingers that he bit off of a prison guard, longer and more graphic electrocution of Pinker, and longer scene of possessed coach stabbing his own hand.
I will say this. For this to get an X rating, even with those, the MPAA sucked around this time.
They
butchered everything.
They killed the slasher.
They did.
Genre.
That's because this kind of is a this is a slasher film. And this comes at the end of that second slasher cycle too.
Which was reinvigorated by Craven.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of the reason it was killed is because the MPAA cut everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They really did.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest slashers of all, the MPAA. it was originally intended to be the beginning of a three-part trilogy, much like Nightmare on Elm Street, but after lukewarm box office reception, the idea was dropped. You know, can you imagine if Shocker had been a franchise?
Wow. Yeah.
That would have been something.
Yeah.
What if they made a Shocker 3? Like, they got around to Shocker 3. Like 2 wound up being, like, the deviation, like Nightmare 2. And Shocker 3 is, like, your Dream Warriors.
Like, but back to basics.
Right. Yeah. But instead of kids banding together to fight Horace Pinker, it's like TV legends. That would be good.
That would have to be.
It's like David Hasselhoff from his character from Knight Rider has to fight Horace
Pinker.
People
around there. Yeah, that would be good.
That'd be cool.
That would be good. Yeah.
Let's get on that. Just a little bit here. There are many similarities to the original Nightmare on Elm Street in this film. The opening shot of Pinker working on his television set is very similar to the opening shot of Freddy making his glove at the beginning of Nightmare on Elm Street. In both movies, the hero's father is a disbelieving police lieutenant. Jonathan has nightmares about the killer that turn out to be real. In both movies, the hero's lover is murdered by the killer. In both movies, the killer comes back from the dead to seek revenge on those responsible for his death. So yeah, there's definitely some similarities. There's no doubt that Craven had Nightmare on Elm Street on the brain when he was working on this movie, for sure. That cannot be argued. Anything else you want to talk about Shocker? I'm not a fan.
I like it a little better than you, but I wouldn't. I see why it's a cult classic, or it's gained some cult status. I see why people are fans of it.
I get it. Yeah, and I think for a Craven completionist, you should check it out.
Right.
Seek it out.
I like the soundtrack.
Yep, soundtrack's good. Just don't go in expecting it to be a terribly good horror film, because it's really not.
No. I was going to say temper your expectations. And, yeah. And there's a reason cult movies are cult movies. It's because sometimes they're not the best.
Yeah. And you know what? If anything, if I can say anything, if there's anything that would maybe push you to make you check out Shocker, it's that it's a great portrait of a big idea that just didn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about more of those right now.
Cool.
Big ideas in horror that just didn't work out. Big misses. The swing and the miss.
Let's do it.
All right. I'd like to kick things off. Actually, where do I want to kick things off? I think I'd like to kick things off with the... What do I want to talk about first? All right, let's talk Day of the Dead.
Okay.
Because you brought up Day of the Dead earlier when we were talking about this episode.
Yeah.
Of course, Day of the Dead's following up on 78's Dawn of the Dead, which was a big deal when it came out. I had a huge following right out of the gate. Landmark horror film. This comes 7 years later.
Mm-hmm.
This is 85.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's kind of ready. Okay, Romero's back. You know, he's in between zombie films, Romero had varying degrees of success, usually not mm-hmm. very. His movies didn't do great most of the time, unless they had a dead in the title. And I think it was time for him to say, okay, well, much like Craven with Shocker, let's go back to something that's familiar to the audience. Let's get some traction in the career going again. And I think going back to zombies made sense. The issue with Day of the Dead, and I'm saying this as a fan and somebody who plans on covering this movie.
I like Day of the Dead too, yeah.
And somebody who's, for whatever reason, it's become their favorite in the franchise. The issue is that it's nothing like Night or Dawn.
No.
Which is its strength, but also at the time was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's grim. It's really nasty. I'd say 95% of the characters are about as unlikable as characters can be. I mean, to the point of, like, you're begging for most of them to be killed.
It's hard to watch some of them.
They're horrific human beings.
We're also in the, when it was released, too, we're in the mid-80s. We're in the middle of those kind of Reagan years when mm-hmm. everything was bright and mm-hmm. fun, and this is not.
And this came out the same year, not far apart, as Return of the Living Dead,
mm.
which was another huge zombie movie at the time, and was kind of cheeky and fun. Great in its own right. Great in its own right, but was kind of fun and carefree and meta in certain ways, and poked fun at the genre while keeping it kind of creepy and fun. Mm-hmm. It was more like a Tales from the Crypt. Like it's kind of spooky but kind of fun. Whereas Day was just like a bullet to the head. So I understand, but that to me is a miss. Regardless of how I feel, it's a miss because the hype, I think, at that point in time from the horror community was through the roof. It was like Savini's back, George is back. He's got this movie that at the time was touted to be was going to be the Ben-Hur zombie movies. This huge, thick script that was.
Are you gonna talk a little bit about the script?
Yeah, I mean it's incredible. The original.
I've never read it.
It's you should check it out. The original Day of the Dead. First of all, Romero's one of my favorite writers in terms of script, like for scripting. His scripts to me are page turners, and that might not be the same for everybody, but to me, I've always, his scripts read almost like books to me, and I love them. And this one is a tome, man, it's huge. It's like two and a half hours worth of pages, basically. You know, it would be a big movie, and obviously it didn't pan out. And quite frankly, it's because he was going to refuse to get an R rating. He wanted it to be unrated. The studio would not give him the money he wanted if unless it was going to be rated R. So they had to.
Now, does a lot of it end up in land?
There are portions okay. that, yeah, there are.
Okay.
It's a really solid mixture of day and land.
Okay.
Into one big movie. And it's a fascinating read. It's totally worth a look. As is, I think I've mentioned it before, his Resident Evil script.
Yeah. I had started his Resident Evil script. I need to finish it.
It's cool.
Yeah.
So this is a big miss in horror. And Romero would go into some kind of, I don't want to call them hard times, because, I mean, he still was making movies. He was still working good, you know. But this kind of put Romero on the back burner for a lot of people for a long time.
It's the last great dead movie. And I like Land.
I like Land, too, but Land is tough. Land is not a great film.
No, it's not.
It's a good film.
It's better than what came after.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, that's a big miss. Tim, what do you got? What's a miss for you?
Let's stick with Wes a little bit.
Sure.
Cursed.
Yeah.
Cursed is one that immediately popped into my head. Cursed was kind of going to be, because it was Kevin Williamson who wrote Scream. It was a few years after that. Both had kind of, Williamson had kind of, I don't want to say flamed out, but he was not even close to as hot as he was in the late 90s.
No,
because this was around 2002, I think.
This is, Dawson's Creek is wrapping up at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
I think. Yep. Yeah.
So we had a fresh young cast.
Including Joshua Jackson.
Josh Jackson, Christina Ricci, Jesse Eisenberg, yep. Isn't it? Who else is in that?
Oh, gosh. I don't even remember the rest of the people. The interesting thing about Cursed is that, like, 90% of the cast was changed halfway through production.
The entire plot was changed. What's the reasoning behind that?
It
was studio, right?
I feel like one day we're going to get into this in depth, because it would take me a half an hour to go through.
Okay.
And you would be laughing hysterically.
I'll pick Cursed. I'll make you watch Cursed.
Thanks.
When we get to that.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Let's just say this. In the finished film, Jesse Eisenberg and Christina Ricci had a brother and sister. When they started shooting that film, they were boyfriend and girlfriend.
That's right. So anyway, it's Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson back together from Scream.
No brainer.
The magic is back. They're going to do for werewolf movies what Scream did for slashers.
Obviously.
They did not.
No.
I bombed. It got terrible reviews.
Yeah. It's sad.
It's not even, I can't even defend it much. I like the part where the werewolf flips somebody off.
That was really good. I won't disagree with you there.
But it's been a while since I've seen it, so will we do a rewatch of it? I want to say My Soul to Take, but I don't even think... My Soul to Take wasn't even that hyped. I don't even think it was... That was just Wes... Although, someday I want to get into My Soul to Take, too, because there's some stuff going on there that I don't even... My Soul to Take feels like Shocker to me, I understand it even less a lot of the times.
Yeah, it's a little less on the nose.
A ton of stuff
for sure.
With condors, and the kids talk really weird.
Yeah.
I've seen My Soul to Take, I know there's a group of, there's a lot of people, a few people on Twitter that are in the same boat as me that have, watched this movie.
These are fascinated by it.
Four or five times, and for the life of, you know he's trying to say something. He has to be. It's so bizarre.
It's so weird that he has to be.
A couple other ones. Anytime it seems like they've tried to reboot some of the old Universal monsters, it kind of falls through.
Mm-hmm.
The Dracula in the 78?
Yeah, there's a 78.
The Universal Dracula. It's good. I like that one. But I never really, people don't talk about that one much. Mm-hmm. Dracula in the, who was it that did Dracula? Was it Coppola?
Yep. Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Frankenstein. Kenneth Branagh's Frankenstein.
Yep.
Dracula Untold.
Yep.
These never...
Wolfman with Benicio del Toro.
It seems like they've tried to reboot or kind of re-energize those characters a lot, and it never seems to work out. Even the Mummy movies were just...
Those weren't horror films.
They're action films.
Yeah, which is fine.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with the first one when
Me
it came
too.
Out. You know what's interesting to me? I think the one that would be successful is Creature from the Black Lagoon. And they haven't gotten there. I mean, I know for a fact there's been 14-15 directors attached to that at some point, but it just never got off the ground. So
it's where most of those movies aren't very good though. Now that I think about it,
yeah,
I like the 70s Dracula. Who's Dracula? Oh, Langella's Dracula in that.
Yep.
And
yep. That's right.
I don't like the two in the 90s at all.
No.
Yeah. Untold is fun, but
yeah,
it's not like
I had a good time with
it. It's not like I was itching for more. Wolfman was okay.
It was all right.
Wolfman's fine, but it wasn't like I wanted to see more.
Can I get you to agree on air that Wolf with Jack Nicholson was a better film than Cursed?
God. Ugh. No, I would rather watch Cursed, I think.
Son of a bitch.
I don't like
Wolf. I'm going to get you one day.
Do you like Wolf?
No. I just want to hear you say Wolf is better than this.
Okay.
And one day I'll make it happen. Okay. That's going to be a new running gag. One other one I wanted to bring up was, do you remember the Blair Witch hype?
Holy smokes. Yeah.
So we've talked about Blair Witch. We've talked about how big it blew up. It became a huge phenomenon. There was the Sci-Fi Channel special that broke down the true story. Mm-hmm. There was the ARG website, augmented reality stuff going on.
Yeah.
There was a three video game series on the PC that you could have. I think it was Myst. It was a point-and-click adventure. I mean, it was huge, right?
They had something there.
It was big. It was like taking over the world for a second there. And then they released the sequel. Finally, the sequel's coming out. It's Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows,
baby.
And it came out. And they even had this big, huge thing where you could see certain letters hidden in the backgrounds of the film, and then we pieced together clues about the truth of the Blair Witch and all this garbage, all this mumbo jumbo. And the movie came out, and it fucking sucked.
When's the last time you watched it? Have you watched it recently?
A few years ago.
I watched it like months ago.
It's not good though.
No, it's not. But it's batshit crazy. It's like
nuts.
You watch that, and like it's in the same vein as Halloween 3. Maybe like Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Yep.
Where like it's that.
Where you
say
yourself,
sequel.
How the hell did this get made?
It's that sequel.
It's a sequel.
Like you know how it got made, but like you know how it got made is because it was following up to an insanely popular.
Well, I shouldn't say how did it get made, but it's like how did it come
version?
Out in this form?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I know that's.
How was the studio like? That's the one we're signing
spoilers,
off.
Spoilers. It ends in an orgy. Mm-hmm. Blair Witch 2 ends in an orgy, and it's so awesome. None of it makes any sense, really. But it's just so weird.
But that single movie coming out, which was enough to destroy any and all of the goodwill.
It killed that franchise. It probably hurt the most recent Blair Witch. Did you see that one?
No.
I had fun with that one.
Okay.
You should check that one out.
I will.
It does some neat things with the mythology. It's not great.
Can I ask you a question?
But it's a better follow-up to the first one than Book of Shadows is.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
This is going to be a spoiler for the new Blair Witch, but I'm just curious. Do you see the Blair Witch?
Okay. I don't think so.
They still keep it secret.
They still keep it secret.
Good.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
good.
There's some cool. They explain a lot of like the space time. There's a lot of space time stuff in it. It's
Holy pretty, smokes!
It's
okay.
kind of it's got some neat ideas at play.
I already wanted to see it because of the crew involved, but
yeah, I would temper the expectations a little bit because I know you're a big fan of those guys too.
Yeah.
Temper it a little bit, but it's definitely a better follow-up than Book of Shadows. Oh, and
I would
hope
so.
Of the newer like reboots, it's better than Rings.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I hear from you that it's not very good.
No.
So. All right. Let's move along. Let's get into Stephen. Well, I shouldn't say Stephen King's. It's Mary Lambert's Pet Sematary. But Mary Lambert's and Stephen King's Pet Sematary, because he wrote the script, a rarity for him to write the scripts for his movie adaptations. Behind a young family's home in Maine is a terrible secret that holds the power of life after death. When tragedy strikes, the threat of that power soon becomes undeniable. Pet Sematary. Saw the movie before I read the book, like many of Stephen King's adapted works. It freaked me out as a kid. I mean, it really freaked
me
out.
The movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is one of those horror movies, and it's not even from a gore perspective or a jump scare perspective or even a creepiness perspective, just purely from how goddamn dark the story
subject
is.
Matters. Yeah.
I like this is one of those rare horror movies where I'm like, my kid's not watching this until they're a little older.
I think I even have memories of like flipping by this on USA and like feeling my parents go, "Nope."
Yeah. It's dark. I mean, it's so dark, in fact, and I'm talking here now about the book as well, that the King has said the one novel that he wrote that actually like freaked him out was Pet Sematary.
He doesn't like the novel.
No, he doesn't. And he actually had no plans on releasing it. He kind of wanted to just scrap it once it was finished. He had multiple people tell him, like, this is too dark, including, I believe, his wife told him, mm-hmm. like, it's too much. And basically, he had a contract, and he needed another book for the contract to get out of the contract. And so he's like,
"He dropped it.
Hell with it. Let's just throw it out there." I'm glad he did because it's my favorite King novel.
Right? Yeah.
Because it's so uncompromising, and I love that about it.
Yeah,
I really do. And this movie, I remember going in this with this feeling, and I've seen it a few times. I remember going into this thinking this is one of the better King adaptations. I still feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I still do after watching it this time. What I will say, however, though, is watching this as an adult is very different than watching it when you are younger, a teenager. It's harder to watch now.
I was going to say.
I actually have a harder time with it. and I think a lot of it has to do with the violence with animals bums me out always. I mean, that's just hard to watch anyway. Mm-hmm. The stuff with the kid, mm-hmm. with the little boy is rough, probably because I'm at that age where I'm starting to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Then they don't do a very good job of watching him.
Oh God, they're really not very good people.
They're not.
They're not good parents, and they're not very good people.
This is once again, Tim and Willie judge horror movie parents.
It's true though, and you know what? I'm just gonna say right now that includes their neighbor played by Fred Gwynne.
Fred Gwynne, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was fantastic. A great boy.
Oh, he's so Eddie, sweet.
Herman Munster.
Yeah, he gives a killer main accent.
Oh, God,
he's so good. The ground is sour.
He reminds me of the guy from the Crash Test Dummies.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. Anyway, so here's what I'll say. I still love this book. I actually plan on rereading it soon. I read it every few years to remind myself of how horrible life can really be.
Well, and then to become a better future parent, I hope.
Yes, hopefully. It's like a guideline of what not to do. And I will say, though, there are some stories that work way better as books and some subject matter that's much more digestible as a book than it is as a film. A lot of the stuff in the book I don't want to watch.
Mm.
I just don't. And that's okay. That's good. That's what this movie's trying to do. The entire point of this story, in book form and film form, is people dealing with death. That's it. This is Stephen King's final word on the topic of death and what it does to people. And he covers just about every possible type of way somebody could handle that. You know, you've got a child who's dealing with the idea of death, who's dealing with the idea of losing her cat, which oftentimes is the first death many of us deal with as a kid, is the death of a pet.
I think I remember. Well, yeah,
great grandparents too can be another one. But I think oftentimes we're so young when it happens, we don't. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I know my first death that I remember was a pet, and I remember not understanding it fully. So you see that aspect of dealing with death. You see somebody who's a little older in the I believe his name is Judd Crandall is the neighbor. You see somebody who's seen a lot of probably his friends and family pass away, who's a little more accepting of the idea of death. He says it a couple times in the movie. Sometimes dead is better, because he's older. He's a little wiser. He's realized. Well, he seems a little wiser. Mm-hmm. We're gonna get into that in a minute here. But he makes some questionable decisions in this movie too. But here's a guy who's maybe embraced the idea that he's got less years ahead of him than he has behind him. That's an interesting perspective on death. There's an acceptance there, I think. And then you've got the character, the wife and mother, and I don't remember the character's name off the top of my head, but, Mrs. Creed. And she is somebody who was traumatized by, events in her childhood dealing with death, really horrific stuff.
Rachel,
thank you. With her sister Zelda, and her sister Zelda kind of dying, wasting away in front of her. That led her to be the kind of person who straight up cannot be challenged with even the idea of somebody dying without like wigging out. And I mean, she, and that's the tough part about her characters. You want to hate her cause you're like, just grow the F up almost.
Yeah, stop then, screaming so much.
But then you kind of like see what she went through and you're like, that would kind of mess you up a little bit. So it's tough.
Right.
I don't want to ramble on too much.
No, you're fine because,
I love the story. I always have.
You've got more to say about this than I do.
I want a little side note about my experience as a kid with this. I don't know about Gaylord. You'll have to let me know. I'm not sure. But in the Berkeley School District, we had a strict summer reading project all through middle school. And I believe the first year of high school. So it was like 4 years there. Where you had to pick a book from a list of books that were approved by the whoever approved them.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to read the book over the course of the summer, and you had to do some type of project. There's a list of possible projects you could do. Okay. Do you have anything like that when you were?
Yeah. It was mostly just like a summer reading list, though.
Okay.
It wasn't like that.
Yeah. Okay. So we had a project due a couple weeks into the beginning of the school year based around this book. So I didn't want to read any of the stuff on the list. I wanted to read Pet Sematary. And I bugged my mom, and she's finally like, all right, read Pet Sematary. If you want to read, if you think you can get through the book, then you read the book, and that's what you'll do your project on. And I did, and I made a diorama based on Pet Sematary.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Sweet.
Is this anywhere? Do you still have this?
The diorama's gone, I'm afraid.
Oh, that hurts.
It was pretty gross. I think. I can't remember actually what it was. I know the cat was included. I know Church was included. Who's a cool-ass cat. pre- and post-death, he's really cool. He doesn't play around. He just lives his life. But I made a diorama, and I brought it into school. I believe this was the sixth grade. I believe my teachers informed the higher ups at the school, like, this is an issue. This kid read Pet Sematary. Like, and they contacted my parents, and my mom was like, and I love this about her, that she goes, how are you going to discipline the kid for reading something well past his reading level?
Right.
It's way more advanced, and he understood what was going on and got, like, why would you, this is not me tooting my own horn, this is what my mother said, was no. like, why would you, how would you, like, punish him for that? And after that point, they let me read whatever I wanted to.
I agree with your mother.
Yeah, I agree too. Yeah.
You should be encouraging.
Absolutely.
That as a school. Yeah.
Maybe not Pet Sematary. Necessarily, but if I'm ready to read that and I can handle it and I get through the book and I understand the book.
Yes, if you could elaborate on the themes of the book.
Absolutely, yes, through the form of a beautiful diorama that I have constructed.
Maybe you say, like, hey, really read something a little bit lighter next time.
Maybe a little lighter in subject matter, but anyway, so that was my little side.
Here's
a cemetery.
Here's White Fang.
Yeah. I think that was on the list, and I was like, no, I'll do animals, but not like that. So anyway, that was my little side story. I'm still a fan of the film. It's not as good as the book, I'll say that. I mean, I think that goes without saying most of the time. It's not quite as good as the book. But it's a pretty damn good adaptation of the novel. It only leaves out certain aspects, and have you read the novel, Tim?
It was in high school. Okay. And unlike you, I probably did not get it.
Okay.
I made no dioramas.
Okay.
and I may not even finished it. So
the only thing the major thing that they leave out of they leave two big things out of the film adaptation. One is the Wendigo.
Right.
Which is kind of the possessing force in the book that is barely, it's not even referenced in the movie, really. There's kind of a weird part where an evil face flies out at the main character that's unexplained. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, Fred Gwynn's face. I don't know. It's really bizarre.
Which is a bummer because we don't have a lot of good Wendigo movies.
No, we don't have enough. Yeah. And then the other one is the fact that the Fred Gwynn's character's wife is alive in the novel, and her life being in danger and being saved by Dr. Creed, by Lewis, is actually the kind of the important plot point that makes him say, okay, I'll help you with the cat dying. It's almost like paying him back for saving his wife's life. He goes, okay, I'm going to do something for this guy. He does it out of pure... In the movie, because there's no real motivation for it, he kind of seems like an asshole. Because you plant this seed in his head of, oh, this is an easy way. This is how you just can make it so your daughter doesn't have to deal with death anymore. It's a problem. And that's one issue I have with the character as he's presented in the movie. So, Tim, what are your thoughts?
I'll be quick on it.
Sure.
I'm enjoying listening to you talk about it because I don't have too much to say about it. I like it. I read the novel in high school. Do not remember much of it. It is at times, Mary Lambert, right? Is her name?
Yes.
I think this is an interesting movie to look at from the perspective of it being directed by a woman.
Absolutely. I'm glad you talked about
that.
Yeah.
And I do think that's interesting. I'm trying to I'm not crazy about the look of it. I think it looks like a TV movie a lot of the time.
Yeah, a little bit. I will say the set of the Pet Sematary is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
The opening shots when they're filming just the empty cemetery and it kind of pans up from underneath and you see they designed a very cool cemetery. It's not shot great most of the time.
Visually, I don't think she's fantastic.
Sure.
She would go on to a couple. She did Urban Legends, Bloody Mary.
She did Pet Sematary, too.
And The In Crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember The In Crowd?
You bought me a copy of The In Crowd.
Good.
On DVD. I still have it. I haven't watched it, but.
But I think it's interesting, particularly when it comes to the relationship between Denise Crosby and her sister. I think that's kind of where it shines through. I think a lot of the stuff with the kids, particularly the little girl, I think that's really well done. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps coming from a female perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I don't have a ton to say about it.
Okay.
The one thing I wanted to touch on, because I'm curious, and I tried to do some research, and there was an interview with the documentary filmmaker, you know, Errol Morris?
Yeah.
He did, like, Thin Blue Line and stuff.
Yep.
He did a movie called Gates of Heaven. Have you ever seen Gates of Heaven?
No.
Oh, God.
Not Heaven's Gate.
No, not Heaven's Gate. Gates of Heaven is a rough movie. It was his first movie, and it was in 1980. And like Roger Ebert has named it like one of the best movies of all time, like one of the 10 best movies of all time. And it's a movie about owners of a pet cemetery. And it's fascinating. It's heartbreaking. And it came out in 1980, and King wrote this in like 82, 83, didn't he? Or he was writing around that time.
Yeah.
And I'm almost curious if maybe this stemmed from that. From watching that.
Maybe.
Maybe this is a horror movie version of that. There's weirdly enough, there's an interview with Errol Morris. Errol Morris interviews Stephen King in 2011, 2012, I think, because he's such a huge fan of that JFK novel King just wrote.
Oh, yeah.
2263.
Yeah.
So.
That's kind
of
cool.
No, I think it's interesting to watch as an adult. I do think a lot of the themes work pretty well, and I think the female director has a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like it. That's where I'll leave it.
Okay, sure. little bit here, trivia wise. Bruce Campbell was the first choice to play Lewis Creed. Can't even imagine that. Stephen King once mentioned that's the only novel he wrote that really scared him. The original screenplay did feature the Wendigo. That was mentioned in the novel, but was ultimately cut from the film. Its presence is implied only twice. First, in the scene when Lewis is walking through the woods at night and hears something large knocked down a tree, and second, when Judd first takes Lewis up to the Indian burial ground, there's some kind of loud crash, and Judd mentions it's only a loon. I would say that there's a third one where a weird face flies out at him, but... the first film screenplay that Stephen King adapted from one of his own novels. I think it shows, and I think in this situation it actually works. George Romero was originally set to direct, but when filming was delayed, he dropped out. Mary Lambert stepped in.
That would be interesting.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would have went dark with this.
I shudder at just how exciting that prospect would have been. Tom Savini turned down a chance to direct the film.
That would have been interesting. I don't know if that would have worked.
I don't know.
I think I'd rather see this. I'd like to see that.
I'd see either one. And finally, the role of Zelda, Rachel's dying sister, was played by a man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, director Mary Lambert wanted Zelda to end her scenes to frighten the audience, but did not believe that a 13-year-old girl was scary, so she cast Andrew Hubestank in the role to make something a little off about Zelda. It works, because that's one of the images in this movie that's burned into my brain, is her kind of running towards the camera.
Oh, God. That is a really good shot. I take back some of the visual.
That bit is good. The other one that stuck with me for years and years and years is the one shot of the shoe rolling after the little boy's hit by the car, and then the Achilles tendon getting cut. I can't do it.
You know what? The decapitated head is really good, too.
Yeah.
The guy with missing half his head.
Yeah, he's sweet.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's cool. Anyway, okay. let's talk a little more Stephen King before we move on to our final film for the episode. Tim, what's your favorite Stephen King adaptation? Or what are some of your favorites?
This is, oh boy. Okay. I had a list and I forgot it.
Okay.
But I'm going to say off the top of my head, I really like Christine.
Yep, agreed.
I really, really like The Mist.
Agreed.
But mainly the black and white version.
Also
I think
agreed.
It's perfect. and it also covers up one of the weakest parts of the movie, which is the CGI.
Yep.
Shawshank I like. I like Shawshank. This is a weird one because technically it's not a very good adaptation, but I love The Shining.
Yeah.
If I were going to pick like a favorite movie of these, it might be The Shining.
The Stephen Weber one, right?
Was it Stephen Weber?
Stephen Weber.
Stephen Weber. Okay, Tim Daly was in a different King adaptation, was Tim Daly in The Stand?
Yes.
Yes, he
was. No, that was Gary Sinise.
Okay.
Was the lead.
What ones am I forgetting here? Because there's a couple.
Green Mile. I'm going to throw that out there.
I do like Green Mile.
Fan of the Green Mile.
There's one main one I'm forgetting, though. Dreamcatcher.
Oh, God.
No, I do like Dreamcatcher. Oh, Carrie.
Yeah.
Carrie might.
Carrie.
Carrie or The Shining are probably my two favorites.
Okay. Good choices. I would throw this on there, on one of my favorites. Still works for me. And like I said, there's some things I remember from my childhood that will always stick with me with this one. I want to throw out Cat's Eye.
That's a good choice.
I fucking love Cat's choice. Eye.
Yeah.
I
forget
fan.
About that one.
Big fan.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw out Creepshow.
Yeah.
There's a couple stories that in Creepshow that are his stories.
I forget about that. Okay.
So the couple of anthology movies actually that he's been involved in, I like quite a bit. Then everything you said, I agree with for sure. Those are all up there. The Dark Half is actually kind of a cool movie.
Oh, The Dark Half is okay. Yeah. I don't mind that. The one that I forgot though is Dead Zone.
Dead Zone's really cool too.
Yeah, Dead Zone's
but here's
really
the
cool.
thing: here, there's that's it. Is there's a marriage between King's material and established horror directors.
Yeah, because Christine was Carpenter, Dead Zone was Cronenberg,
and Dark Half was Romero.
Romero.
And so was Creepshow.
Shining's Kubrick.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a good marriage, though.
De Palma is
De Palma
Carrie.
Is Carrie.
I mean, think about that. The ones that really work are these ones where it's.
And what's funny is I think those are usually the ones he likes the least.
I know.
He likes the ones, he likes the straight up adaptations.
Well, he likes a director for hire.
Mm-hmm. I get it. He likes McGarris.
Yeah, he loves McGarris.
And McGarris seems
fine.
Like an awesome guy.
I like McGarris too.
I want to listen to his podcast.
He's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, least favorite King adaptation. Do you have one that like pissed you off? Like you're like, this is really bad.
I'm thinking here. Because a lot of times I've heard.
I'd say Dreamcatcher, but Dreamcatcher the book sucks.
Dreamcatcher is so bizarre.
Yeah.
I got Children of the Corn. Yeah, you know what? Children of the Corn.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It sucks.
It sucks, and it has like 10 sequels.
Yeah.
They all suck, I'm yep. sure. I don't like that franchise.
Yeah, and the short story is actually kind of cool.
I forgot Misery. Misery is good.
Misery is amazing. We should have mentioned that.
Let me bring this up, because I had. Let me bring up his adaptations real
sure.
quick. What about you?
I like the It TV movie.
Do you like the It TV
movie? I do.
Okay.
The first half. Second half kind of sucks. But the adult stuff in the books isn't nearly as interesting to me either, so.
I don't like the Stand miniseries that much.
No, it's not very good.
But I don't like the book that much either.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the Stand.
The Langoliers is awful.
Maximum Overdrive. How could we? We can't not talk about Maximum Overdrive.
I fucking love Maximum Overdrive.
It's batshit crazy.
It's if you want to see cocaine in cinematic in cinematic form, that's Maximum Overdrive.
Cujo's fine. Okay. Needful Things. Did I see that? I know
Needful
I
Things is all right.
Yeah. Sometimes They Come Back is not very good.
No.
Hearts in Atlantis. Ow. That's boring. Sleepwalkers.
Mm.
You like Sleepwalkers?
You know, speaking of Mick Garris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most Mick Garris ones are just kind of...
There's kind of a... Sleepwalkers is getting kind of a weird, like... People are looking at it again. And I suggest you give it another shot. There's some interesting stuff going on there, actually. And the soundtrack is so fucking sweet. Dude, so good.
What was the one I just saw? I kind of like Silver Bullet. Did we talk about Silver Bullet?
I like Silver Bullet too.
You know what one I kind of like? And they recently did one that is not going to get very good reviews, which is Cell. But the one I kind of like is 1408.
Yeah.
1408 is kind of a fun
yeah.
mid-king. That's about... Firestarter is not very good, but I'm glad they're remaking it.
Yeah, me too.
I think that's a good one to
let's
remake.
Let's do for a remake.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's, real quick before we get out of King territory... Any King stories, books, whatever that you want to see adapted or readapted?
Yeah, I think probably one of the first King books I read was, and I haven't read them all. I'm actually going through it right now. I'm reading it right now. I'm about halfway through, I think. And I like it a lot. Insomnia.
Yeah,
is one I always thought they could have made a good movie out of that.
Yeah, they could.
I'm totally cool with the Firestarter.
Yep, agreed.
Reboot. I think that's one that could be rebooted. I think that they're probably going to end up making a Dr. Sleep movie, and I'm okay with it, mainly because that miniseries exists. If it was a straight-up sequel to Kubrick's Shining, I'd kind of, there's some interesting stuff in that. That's a movie that could actually benefit from a movie adaptation, because there's some stuff you should cut.
Sure.
Because it's that King tends to ramble.
Yeah, he can. Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's a good one to remake.
Yeah.
I think the book sucks. I've never actually read it, but Desperation.
Okay.
I always loved the cover when I was a kid, so I always wanted to see a movie version of that, because I know they made one, but I'm not going to watch it because apparently it's shit. Maybe you can't make a good one from it. Oh, The Running Man.
New Running Man would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to see some of the really dark dystopian.
Rob Zombie tried to make a new Running Man, by the way.
Did he?
31 is pretty much the Running Man.
Oh, that's right.
Sorry.
Some of the Bachman stuff, like the really dark dystopian stuff, especially in today's society, would be interesting to make a movie out of. Yeah, like The Long Walk and...
That is one that always comes up for King fans.
It'd be interesting.
Like, you should make that into a movie. Yeah.
I think that's where that's the untapped King stuff, I think, to me, is the Bachman stuff.
Yeah.
The question is, how do you adapt some of that stuff and keep an audience? All right. Well, I'm glad we got to talk a little King.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Final
film.
Are
you excited for Dark Tower? Do you see the trailer? I know the answer to this.
I don't know.
You're more excited for it.
Yes.
You excited for that TV show he's doing?
Yes. Castle Rock?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I didn't mention Stand By Me. It's fucking incredible.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Stand By Me is amazing.
I always forget about that. Sometimes I forget about stuff like Stand By Me and Hearts in Atlantis.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Stuff like that. Dolores Claiborne.
If they're able to make the Castle Rock show have ties to all the Castle Rock stories, I'll be super into it. I will be super into
it. One more I wanted to mention, and I think they are making it into a movie, is his son, the fireman. Mm. The book I just read, it's really good.
Yeah.
And I think right now Louis Leterrier is attached to it, and I'm kind of iffy on that, but I want to see it made into a movie.
Sure.
And he wrote Horns, and Horns is good.
Horns is sweet.
Yeah.
I should mention, actually, here's a disappointing one, because they never should have attempted making it into a movie, The Lawnmower Man. Which has nothing to do with the short story.
Yeah.
Literally, you know what the short story is, right?
No.
It's a guy, like, knocks on a dude's door, and he's like, hey, I'll mow your lawn for such and such amount of money. He goes, okay. And then he starts mowing his lawn.
Oh, yeah.
And he's naked, and he's, like, running around with the lawnmower trying to kill the guy with the lawnmower. That's the story.
Are you kidding me? Make that with Pierce Brosnan tomorrow.
Yeah, and Jeff Fahey.
Yes, please. Oh, God, that's right, Jeff Fahey's in it.
Yeah, naked Jeff Fahey running around trying to kill Pierce Brosnan with a lawnmower.
What was the one that just popped? Oh, Gerald's Game is interesting to me because they're making that into a movie.
Flanagan's making it, Mike Flanagan.
I don't like that book.
Yeah, it could be cool, though.
Yeah.
It could be.
Yeah.
I don't know, we'll see.
I'm not crazy about that book, but it could be cool because he's a cool director.
I think that's a Netflix thing,
too. And you know what, that subject, right. Yeah, I think so, too. And that subject matter, he might be good with that, too. Because it kind of takes place all in one room, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Our final movie of this episode is Intruder. The plot is an overnight stock crew of a local supermarket find themselves being stalked and slashed by a mysterious maniac. That's the plot of Intruder. That really is. That is the plot of Intruder. And I don't mean that in a bad way. You mentioned to me that after... after I watched Shocker, that I would long for the simplicity of Intruder.
Yeah.
And you were right.
Right.
I begged for it. My prayers were unanswered, though, but that's okay. I thought I had seen Intruder. I had never seen Intruder.
Good.
This was the first time.
Good, I'm glad.
I don't know how. This is, like, perfectly up my alley for this, the time period that I would have been watching stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
My video store just didn't carry it. I'm sure that's all it was.
I didn't see this until later, though, yeah. Either. I think it was on... something.
Yeah.
Maybe you've been on. You know what? I think I rented it as a disc rental off of Netflix.
Okay.
Because I think they had this and they had Crime Wave.
Okay.
Yep.
I could sit here and try to get deep with Intruder, try to get into what they're trying to say. And you know, I could even go as far as this movie, Intruder, is very forward thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a commentary on the plight of the small business owner being bought out and taken over by your Amazons and your Walmarts and your other online retailers. And he's fighting back by killing random people that have nothing to do with it.
His own employees.
This is my favorite slasher villain of all time.
Yeah, you texted me that, and I want to hear why. Because I love him, too.
Here's why. I don't even remember his name. It doesn't matter. He's awesome. Bill Roberts is his name. I apologize. Because some of the posters reveal that he is, in fact, the killer. You showed me those. It's embarrassing. Bill Roberts is great because we've talked about slasher films and the tropes of slasher films. And almost every horror movie slasher villain has a deep, dark secret from their past. Usually their childhood. Somebody did them wrong. Right? Somebody burned or disfigured them. Somebody caused a family member to be killed in front of them. Somebody messed with them as a kid. Some girl scorned them at a young age. Maybe ditched them at the dance. There's always some deep, dark thing, and the killer comes back later to get revenge. Doesn't matter which one you're watching. Doesn't matter if it's Sleepaway Camp. Doesn't matter if it's The Burning. Doesn't matter if it's Prom Night. They've all got it. This one is a man who's very passionate about being a grocer. And when he sees his passion being taken away from him by his greedy business partner, he decides he's going to become an insane person now. He decides, I'm going to be a crazy person now.
Yeah.
And he kills, for some reason, kills everybody that works for him. I don't know why he kills all those people.
I don't either.
But you know what? I think he offed the first one, and he's like, I like this. And I think that's when he went, my new passion is killing people. That's Bill Roberts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And boy, does he kill him.
Yeah, that's what I want to focus on this movie.
Yeah. Let me whip through some factoids real quick.
No, go for it.
And then I want you and I to just go nuts on the fact that this movie, if nothing else, is just an incredible showcase for K&B effects.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who did not see this movie like myself, I should say for those who did see this movie, unlike myself, you would have seen how great K&B would wind up being years down the road.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell, Sam Raimi, and Ted Raimi were all heavily promoted by Paramount as the stars of the film, and their names are featured prominently on the video and DVD artwork. None of them are actually the stars of the picture, especially Bruce Campbell. Although I would argue that Sam might be the star.
I was going to say, I will make the argument that Sam's the best actor in the movie.
Sam's awesome.
He's incredible in this movie.
It's really cool. The town where this film is set, Walnut Lake, Michigan, is named after a lake in West Bloomfield, Michigan, called Walnut Lake.
Yep.
We should go there.
I am familiar with it,
and
yeah.
And take pictures for our Twitter.
We'll get ice cream at the Follow shop down the street.
Yeah, there we go. Director Scott Spiegel, the Raimi brothers, and Bruce Campbell grew up in the West Bloomfield / Bloomfield Hills area.
Mm-hmm. Scott Spiegel still lives around here, I believe.
Does he?
Yeah.
Cool. We should try and get in touch with him.
Mm-hmm.
Director Scott Spiegel originally thought of having the final shot go all the way down Jennifer's throat and inside her body to her heart, and the movie would end on a freeze frame as the heart stopped beating.
You know, let's talk about Scott a little bit, just real quick.
Sure.
Because he has a couple wacky ideas for shots. One of the reasons I suggested this movie is because it's the closest we will probably ever get to a Sam Raimi slasher movie.
Yes.
It has a certain cheekiness that Raimi movies usually have. Mm-hmm. Is a certain, like a goofy tone to it.
Yep.
The original title for this was actually called, I think, The Night Shift, The Final Crew, or The Night Crew, The Final Shift.
So good.
Which is way funnier, but the studio changed it to Intruder, which is boring as hell. That original title fits the tone of the movie much better.
Yeah.
Because the movie's knowingly silly.
It is.
But some of the shots, there is one shot in particular, and it's a shot by Scott Spiegel through a rotary telephone.
Mm-hmm.
That is the flat-out stupidest shot I've ever seen in a movie. It's so stupid.
Points for trying something.
Points for trying something. And that's why I say it's like, I almost think Raimi could have pulled that off. Like a shot coming up through the phone.
Sure.
But Scott Spiegel does not seem to have quite the talent that Sam does, and it's just a shot through what seems to be a plastic ring.
Okay.
With black.
Yeah, I do recall that.
It's so stupid.
I do recall that.
Yeah. But he goes for a couple flashy shots here, and some of them are kind of fun.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's all I got for factoids. I want to talk about the effects. I have to.
The effects are the star of the movie.
So I've been waiting here for a while. I've been just wanting to get through everything else just to get to this. There's a scene in this movie. Now, the first couple kills are really solid. It's really solid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you get a guy, gets something poked in his eye. You know, you get a guy who's thrown up on a meat hook. Kind of classic stuff. All top-notch practical effects. They all look great. Then you get to a scene where a gentleman has his head laid down on some sort of meat slicer. And it saws through the middle of his head. And it's one of the most insane things I've ever seen.
It's so good. I'm trying to find it right now on here so I can watch it real quick.
It's nuts.
No, it's crazy.
Like, it looks it looks real.
Once the killing starts in this, oh God, you know what? The other one I remember, and I'm remembering it right now, is the trash compactor that smushes the guy's head.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
I always thought about that when I worked at ABC Warehouse, closest thing to
sale. Yeah, because they had one of those compactors.
Because we had a compactor. Yeah. It's so gross. I'm watching it right now. It's
so good.
McKinney effects by this point. This is Greg Nicotero.
Yep.
Howard
Berger.
And Robert Kurtzman.
Yep.
they had done, I believe, I think their first movie was, oh gosh, I'm losing it right now.
Well, I want to start real quick, but before they even formed a group or formed a company together, we talked about Day of the Dead earlier, Greg Nicotero.
That's what I was thinking.
Who's kind of become, he's become kind of the face of K&B, you know. Greg Nicotero got a start on Day of the Dead working as kind of like, I want to say like almost an understudy to Tom Savini.
The two I was thinking of, yeah, Day of the Dead, and then they did the effects for Evil Dead 2 and Phantasm 2.
Yeah.
And both the effects in those movies are fantastic,
yeah,
too.
I remember Phantasm 2 having some really standout stuff, and obviously Evil Dead 2, that goes without saying.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is a showcase. I think this is some of the better kills in all of slasher movies.
Agreed.
I think these are so...
Agreed.
They're just so well done. Oh, yeah, here comes the sawing of the head off.
can you turn that my direction, because I want to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to watch while we... record. That's how good this is I'm allowing myself to be completely distracted while we record.
So that's the start of the movies. And I will say this, I'm not the biggest Walking Dead fan. You're still watching it, right?
Yeah, I'm not like fully caught up or anything. I watch it every once in a while if I get the itch to watch something kind of
binge.
Yeah. I'll watch a few episodes.
Yeah. But I always thought from the few episodes I watched, the star of that show, I see Willie's face right now, it's the death happening, but the star of that show is the effects. Like, the zombie effects are fantastic.
They're incredible.
The kill effects are fantastic. I know they have also done the effects on, like, the Transformers movies, so they mm-hmm. would go on to be big stars. Particularly Greg Nicotero had.
When you think of effects, most people think of that company now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and this is, it's cool to see where they got their start. That's kind of what I wanted to do. I wanted to watch this movie because of that. And I also wanted to watch it because I wanted to do a slasher movie.
Yeah, for sure.
Particularly an 80s one.
For sure. And I'm glad we did it. I had a lot of fun with this one.
I will say this. The first half is not great.
It's kind of slow. It's
very slow.
It's a lot of like trying to develop the characters a little bit, but they're just bland.
Yeah. Ted's fine. Sam's fun.
Yep.
The boyfriend's hysterical. Like Craig, the red herring boyfriend.
He's so funny.
He's a nutcase.
Yeah, he's crazy. The girl's cute.
Girl's
like
cute. The final girl is really good in this.
Yeah.
I'll say the final girl is, she's one of the better final girls.
She kicks some ass.
Yeah, I like her quite a bit.
Yeah.
But no, the second half of the movie is where it's at.
Yeah,
God,
for sure.
Now, what's his name? The main killer is on it. He's really funny. Oh, now it's going to it might be time to get out of here. It's going to a Luke Evans kill count from No One Lives.
Oh, that's a great, that's a fun one. He wears a Brodus Clay suit.
he wears a big human suit. So yeah, Intruder, I recommend it.
Absolutely, check it out.
There's a Blu-ray out, and it's a good Blu-ray too.
Yeah,
it has a commentary by Scott Spiegel, it has some interviews with Greg Nicotero.
I think it's
by Synapse, right?
Yep. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad we watched that one. Thank you for throwing that out there.
Yeah.
And now I've seen Intruder. All right, I think that wraps it up for 1989. We may or may not revisit this year. Who knows? You never know. We will we'll pop back.
Yeah, we left some on the table there.
There's some on the cutting room floor, like that dude's head from Intruder. don't forget feedback. We love the feedback. Facebook.com/horrormovieyearbook, @HMYearbook on Twitter, horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com, and rate, review, iTunes, 5 stars, all that jazz. I already told you. Tim, what are we doing? Let's say a couple things. First, before we talk about our next episode proper, I want to say we have a few fun things in the works for you guys. And I don't want to announce anything necessarily specifics wise, because I hate to make promises and then break them. But I will say, there's another commentary in the works.
We have a commentary.
We've got a plan for another commentary.
We want to bring back some Fight the Franchise.
Yes, and we want to bring back a segment. For those of you who do not know, we had a our own special kind of sub show on our old podcast, the Midwest Film Nerds podcast, where we did a thing called Fight the Franchise. We picked out a film franchise, usually a horror franchise, and in this case, it will be always a horror franchise. And we kind of went nuts for however long it took and just blasted through the movies and talked about them. So we will be bringing Fight the Franchise back, hopefully at some point here in the near future. So we want to mix things up, do some more fun stuff for you guys. Hopefully you enjoy listening to us, and we want to try some new stuff. So
yeah.
Tim, enough of that. What's our next episode proper going to cover?
We're going to go back a little further. The mission statement was, I believe, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s.
Mm.
We decided we're going to go back a little bit further.
Sure.
We want to do some other years too.
We will.
We're probably going to pick out some of the bigger years.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to do just like some random 40s.
Yeah.
There's not a lot in the 40s because horror movies were trying to be killer on them.
And I'll be honest, we've even looked at some of the stuff early 70s, and there's some years where it's in my opinion, it's tough to find stuff that's...
But I kind of want to do it just because we had so much fun with Dr. Fibes.
I know.
And 71.
I know. That's the tricky thing, yeah.
But I want to do 1968.
68. Okay, so that's the year Night of the Living Dead came out, which is pretty awesome.
Night of the Living Dead, yeah. Rosemary's Baby.
Yep.
Are the two big ones there.
Huge.
So this is a big year.
Okay, what do we got?
But other than those two, it's not that big a year.
Okay.
But there's some interesting stuff here. Hour of the Wolf, which is an Ingmar Bergman movie.
Okay.
Kuroniko, which is a Japanese movie. I have not seen it, but I was looking at it. It looks really interesting.
Okay.
Witchfinder General. I don't know that one.
I have heard of it through a podcast that you and I both like.
Oh, Shockwaves?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know Becca on Shockwaves is a
Witchfinder
big
General.
Fan. I think she's a big fan of Witchfinder General.
Interesting.
If you listen to that show, which you should be if you aren't, that's classic Becca.
The Devil Rides Out, which is a Christopher Lee movie. Dracula Has Risen from the Grave, Christopher Lee movie.
Goddamn.
Curse of the Crimson Affair, which is a Boris Karloff, Christopher Lee movie.
Oh, my God.
He was killing it.
Hell yeah, he was.
Spirits of the Dead. Targets. Have you ever seen Targets?
No.
Targets is really cool. It's a Peter, you know, Peter Bogdanovich?
Yes.
It's one of, Boris Karloff's last movies.
Oh, sweet.
And it's about kind of it's a thriller. It's not really a horror movie, but it's a thriller.
Okay.
And it's about a sniper. And
oh, okay.
And Karloff plays like a retiring horror film icon. It's a really cool movie, and anybody who hasn't seen it should check it out. We've got stuff like The Living Skeleton, Frankenstein's Bloody Terror, The Astro Zombies, The Green Slime, Trilogy of Terror.
With Karen Black?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, Trilogy of Terror is fun. Little
got some Giallo stuff around
doll.
This time too, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is not the Karen Black one. This is a Brazilian.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. But the other one is...
I was going to say that. I thought Trilogy of Terror was way later than 68.
But the other one is Destroy All Monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I you know, Godzilla is such a tricky franchise to try and include on like... a show like ours, you know, because it's Godzilla changes so much. Like I would argue that the original Godzilla and a handful of other ones are definitely horror movies.
The original Godzilla is really dark.
It's really dark.
Yeah.
But they're still monster movies. Mm-hmm. There's still that element of horror.
It's weird. And yeah, I always count the Kong ones as horror movies.
Yeah.
Maybe not the Peter Jackson ones so much. That one always feels.
There's
but you know
terrifying.
What? There's some scary stuff in
dude,
that.
Dude, that Andy Serkis getting eaten by those worms.
I always count the original definitely as a horror movie.
Yeah, agreed.
But.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to do next
cool.
week.
I'm excited.
Night of the Living Dead, Rosemary's Baby, and Destroy All Monsters.
Wow.
Because I wanted to. First of all, that's quite a roster.
That's a great roster.
And I know you're. More of a Godzilla expert than I am.
I'm a huge Godzilla fan. Yep. I can't wait. This is a wonderful excuse for me to buy Destroy All Monsters on Blu-ray.
Good, good.
So thank
Make sure
you for
tell
that.
Your wife. That's all me.
I love being able to blame you. For,
we'll talk off air
yeah.
about other things. So. Sure. So, yep, that's what I do. 1968. There's your homework, folks.
Perfect. All right. Well, hey, thanks for listening, guys. And as always.
Bye-bye, man and woman.